Yes, it is. It's Film Reviews and Movie News with me, Stuart Pink, and a man whose film reviews pack more punches than the Oscars. It's Mark Searby.
Oh, you can't say that. You can't. You're
no.
Not, no.
No.
No. Oh, dear. No. Moving on swiftly, anyway.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Fair enough. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. I'm very well. Yes, I'm good. Yes. So we were just talking off air just then that one of the films we're going to review, the previous film in the franchise, had somebody who both of us have worked with and the listeners have heard as well. Isn't that right?
Yes. Very familiar with Mr. Keith.
Yes.
Legend of Phoenix FM Towers. He was here just last week, actually.
He was, yes. Yes. In last week. For anybody who doesn't know, Keith was in Fantastic Beasts 2. He was, do you know, it was weird because I can tell the story now, actually. I couldn't tell it at the time. But obviously, I was doing the film reviews with Keith when he was filming that segment for the second Fantastic Beasts film.
Oh, wow.
And he said to me, listen, I'm in a really big blockbuster. And at the time, it was either Fantastic Beasts or Mission Impossible. But he wouldn't tell me. He would not tell me at all, right? And then
you totally had him down for Mission Impossible.
I did, do you know what? I did have him down for Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
that was the thing.
I would think so.
That was the thing. And then on his last day, when I was doing the film reviews for him, he said, I've brought in an item that I use in the film and I will give it to, I will let you see it, but you can't say what it is because at this time he was still under embargo. He couldn't say anything at all. So basically, he gave me this box and I opened it and I was going, it's one of those. Oh, right. Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So I couldn't say anything. But basically, he brought his wand in.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So his character has its own wand. So he brought it in to show me.
Next level stuff.
It was. I mean,
Expecto Patronum, yeah.
I mean, genuinely, for anybody who is a massive Harry Potter fan, I mean, I like the stuff, but, you know, I'm not a huge fan. I think they probably would have passed out with seeing that. But he was like, yeah, that's the one that I use in the film. I was like, that's amazing. And then,
oh, that's so cool.
And then months later, I go to the press screening of it and it's on the IMAX. And there's Keith on IMAX, you know, like the UK's biggest screen. And I'm like, there's Keith. He's a bit bigger than when I remember him sitting across the table from me. But yeah, it was nice to see him. That was the thing. It was, you know, and yeah, it was kind of fun.
Oh, what an amazing story. I'd like to think he brought the wand in last week and worked his magic on the airwaves. That's how he's able to do such a great show.
He just knows.
He doesn't do any
of
the buttons. He just waves the wand.
He just waves the wand. They all do it themselves. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But no, it was nice. That was the thing. You know, something like that I thought was a lot of fun, I have to say. You know, it was nice to see him in the film.
Yeah.
It's a shame about the film. I mean, I've spoken to Keith afterwards and said to him, look, it's not a very good film. yeah, it was just nice.
Should have had him in it more.
Exactly. Get him in it more. Absolutely. You know, but yeah, so the reason obviously we were talking about that is because we have a new Fantastic Beasts movie.
There's another one. What are we on now?
So this is the third of supposedly five.
Oh, right. All five of them.
Supposedly, originally, they were talking about seven. I was like, seven? Really? Do we need seven? So now we have Fantastic Beasts, The Secret of Dumbledore, which is about Professor Aldous Dumbledore. He's got to stop the dark wizard Gellert Grindelwald from seizing control of the wizarding world. Unable to stop him alone, Newt Scamander leads a team of wizards and witches against Grindelwald. Okay.
It's classic. Teaming up, Avengers style.
Yes. Where are you, Fantastic Beast wise? Are you a fan of the franchise? Or
they always look great in the trailer. I've never really seen them.
Okay.
Sadly.
Okay.
Keith's going to kill me now.
Yeah, he is. He's going to get. He's going to get that wand out. And
that, I know. I'll be cursed.
Turn
right
you into
here,
something.
Right now.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that the franchise has had its ups and downs. Really, the first film I think is a lot of fun. Lot of fun, really is.
Yeah.
Second film is a dog's dinner. Sorry, Keith. Obviously, there's been recasting for Grindelwald in every single film so far as well. The less said about that, the better.
Oh, okay.
So really, a lot rests on this film's shoulders to get the franchise back on track. Now, the question is, does it succeed? I kind of guess it does. There is a lot more Harry Potter esque stuff in this than the previous films, which I'm not sure if that's a good idea or not, because I thought this franchise, the Fantastic Beasts franchise, was only going to be sort of vaguely linked to Potter, you know, to the original films. Now,
yeah,
it seems
gone heavy.
Yeah, it seems like they're really pushing the intertwining even harder. And I have to say, I didn't feel it at any point. There are times in the film where it felt like they were going, put another Harry Potter reference in there. Get another one in there, shoehorn it in. You're like, we don't need this. We don't. You know, anybody who's a massive fan will know the timeline. Anybody who's not a huge fan, kind of like me, you know, you sort of pass it by and it's fine, it's good. Still understands the vague line that is happening here. I mean, personally, I would have preferred the Fantastic Beasts franchise, and certainly this film, to go along their own path.
Mm.
And see where it takes them, because that's what the first film did. That's what's
that's
great about the first one.
Spin-off series, isn't it? You want it to take its own direction.
That's the thing. And that's what the first one did. They were kind of like, hey, look, here's a little bit of Harry Potter folklore and whatever else. But actually, it's about these new characters. And you're going to like these new characters because they're doing their own thing. And you go, great. Okay, fantastic. That did it very well in the first film. Then in the second one, well, the second one was a dog's dinner for a different reason, to be honest with you. It was the storyline. This one, it seems, yeah, there's a lot of Harry Potter in it. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's nice to see Dumbledore. Well,
yeah,
sexy and buff Dumbledore, okay.
Oh, what really?
Okay. Yes, yes, because it's Jude Law playing young Dumbledore.
Uh-huh,
and he's turned up looking a bit buff and with a beard and, you know, all of the,
back in the day,
hello ladies sort of thing. You know, well, not hello ladies, hello anybody sort of thing. I think Jude Law's very good
hello,
in
Muggles.
This. I think he's very good in this. I like Jude Law. Also, Mads Mikkelsen is excellent as Grindelwald. Perfect bit of cast in there for me.
I saw that in the trailer and thought, oh, well, he looks like a good kind of wizard.
Let's be honest. Mikkelsen's always good. The film's bad. That's what it is, basically. He's good in something, and if it turns out it's bad, it's because it's the film. I think him and Jude Law really do go at it in more ways than one, and I enjoyed that a lot. But then, the sidelining of some of the better Fantastic Beasts characters, such as Jacob and Queenie, love those two, my favourite characters, and Tina, in favour of going back to Hogwarts and in favour of doing more Harry Potter connected, didn't sit right with me.
No,
disappointed. I will say that there is some good Fantastic Beasts mythology in this movie, like there was in the first one. It's just a shame more isn't made of it. There are times where I thought the film was finally finding its feet, you know, it's finally doing its own thing, and then all of a sudden it falls over under the weight of, you know, talking about its original, you know, the original movies, basically the original stories. I mean, look, the film is infinitely better than the second movie, okay, but it's not as good as the first film. I think it's now a franchise that really can't escape the other franchise's ghost, to be honest, which is a shame, because there's a lot going for this, there really is. So the third
still bears the scars of Harry Potter.
Yeah. You know, the film's okay. I just can't shake the feeling it should have been something else and something so much more. But thankfully, it is worth seeing for Jude Law and Mads Mikkelsen.
That's a pretty good bit of casting.
Absolutely. I mean, working. Let's be honest. After the second one, people were like, oh, no, and fed up with this. And then all of a sudden they cast Mads Mikkelsen and everybody went, okay, right. Oh, I'm kind of interested in this. You know, I'm more involved in it now. So I think they've done that right. The Harry Potter references, not right. Doesn't, you know, it's its own beast, pardon the pun. It's its own franchise beast. We don't need to keep reverting back to that. That's the problem.
Yeah, so there's, by your original timeline, a couple more films to come.
I think so.
Fantastic Beasts.
Yes.
I'd like to see less reference to the original.
I just like them to go back to doing their own thing. That's the thing. I know that, obviously, the whole point of it is that right at the end, it ties in nicely to you know, the Potter family and whatever else. I get that. Mm. But there are ways you could do it without even getting to referencing them until the last film. That's the thing. And yet they're already doing it a lot here. This movie feels more like a Harry Potter movie than a Fantastic Beasts movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So out now, cinemas?
In cinemas, indeed.
Big experience on the big screen.
Worth
doing for this one. Looks like
as always, as you know, look, effects. let's be honest. You know, these films always look good. They always look good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so you can't get away from that. So that's fine.
So Fantastic Beasts will go. What do you reckon? Mediocre beasts could have been slightly more fantastic.
Tepid beasts.
Tepid.
I don't really know what is.
What a wonderful word.
What a few steps down from fantastic is tepid? Average? Hmm. Average beasts.
Batting above average beasts.
That's better. Yes. Batting above average beasts. The secrets of sexy Dumbledore.
Now everyone's going.
Yes.
Excellent. What else you got for us, Mark?
So on DVD and Blu-ray, something completely different now. This is a film called Zeros and Ones. It is about an American soldier stationed in Rome who wants to see the Vatican blown up. He embarks on a hero's journey to uncover and defend against an unknown enemy threatening the entire world.
Ooh.
So
okay.
This film is 85 minutes.
Oh, that's fairly quick.
And that includes an introduction by the star Ethan Hawke as well. If it had been any longer, it probably would have been a tougher struggle to watch it than it already is, to be honest with you, because this film is all over the place with its storytelling and with its metaphors and its similes. I really found it a bit of a head scratcher as to what writer-director Abel Ferrara was going for here. I mean, I get that he wanted to make a film that was kind of saying, hey, look, there's a correlation here between religion and war. You know, or war and religion, whichever way around you want to put it, I guess. But it's so abstract. The entire movie is one long abstract piece, apart from a couple of action-led moments. There's a sex scene in the middle as well. I mean, I have really no idea what the film was trying to do. I mean, Ethan Hawke, in the introduction to the movie, and it is part of the movie, by the way. It's not a DVD extra or anything. It's part of the movie. He says that he wanted to work with the director, Abel Ferrara, after seeing Ferrara's work with Willem Dafoe, because he thought that they had made some really fascinating movies, which I'm kind of inclined to agree. There's been some good movies they've made. There've been some bad movies as well. But what Ethan Hawke is thinking here is anybody's guess. He plays two characters. So he plays the soldier, JJ, and then he plays his political prisoner brother. They are curious characters, each with their own faults. But the film, I found really difficult to get a hold of either of them, as in what their motivations were and what they were doing it for. I mean, they said it, but at the same time, I'm kind of feeling like, yeah, I just don't feel like there's a sense of aggression about it all. That's the thing. You know, look,
couldn't connect with him.
Yeah, it is difficult to connect. I will say this, you've got to remember this as well. This is something you have to remember when you're watching the film, is that this was shot during the 2020 lockdowns in Rome. So the film itself is a loose take on the pandemic that the world has been through, basically. You know, there's no escaping from the fact that much of the pandemic in this movie is what Abel Ferrara has put in there as a metaphor. And he's sort of gone for a church versus state narrative, which is also using the pandemic as part of that as well. So really, it's a movie that is essentially about a virus rather than a human being looking to bring down the world, which is kind of interesting, I think. But at the same time, it plays out like, well, then it's just really hard going.
Sounds a bit Angels and Demons.
It's funny, you're not the first person to reference Dan Brown when you're talking about this film. Somebody had said to me earlier in the week, it's like Inferno. And I'm like, well, it's not as bad as Inferno. It's not as bad as Angels and Demons either. It's just the fact that, you know, those are big blockbuster movies. This is an art house movie that is probably a bit too art house even for me. I like the fact that Abel Ferrara has made a film that has taken on Christianity via the means of it actually being an army thriller on the outside, but then also included elements of a worldwide pandemic. I respect him for that, because that
kind of cool idea.
That is interesting filmmaking. You know, that's obscure filmmaking as well, to be honest with
taking
you.
Taking a bit of real life.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. I've got a lot of respect for that, but this film is far too abstract.
Oh, so it's only 80 odd minutes, but more of a zero than a one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, yes.
I just want to say, I've seen the trailer and I was struggling to hear anything Ethan Hawke was saying. He's got that whole deep voice thing going on.
He has, and the audio is not the greatest either. That's got to be said, but I think that's part of the reason, because obviously they're filming this during the lockdowns, so they've got to be really quiet, because otherwise people are going to go, hang on, why are these people out filming and whatever else? So you can see why he's got a gruff voice, but he does go a bit Batman, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. Christian Bale could have done a little extra in this.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, there is a Batman voice in here, which I don't really know why. It doesn't need to be there.
Excellent. You got one more film for us, Mark, for the podcast? What we got?
So I thought we'd talk about a film called Luxor, which is about a British aid worker called Hannah who returns to the ancient city of Luxor. She comes across Sultan, who is a talented archaeologist and also her former lover. As she wanders, haunted by being there previously, she struggles to reconcile the choices of the past with the uncertainty of the present.
Oh, okay.
What really got me about this movie before I'd seen it was the fact that it was a romance set in Luxor. Now,
yeah,
I like that idea. You know, that's a good idea.
Stunning looking place.
Ultimately, it's not a romance story, though. It's an emotional breakdown of a woman who really is struggling with the day-to-day life of her old friends and also her job. So it should have something interesting and thought-provoking to say about, you know, fragile state of minds, and the struggles that people go through when they go back to their old homesteads or when they go back to somewhere that meant a lot to them. But instead, it is achingly dull. It's just like a meander around Luxor, which beautifully shot. I will say that if you've never been to Luxor, I have not. I have to say this beautifully
looks
shot.
Amazing. Yeah.
But there's very little in terms of emotional storytelling. And it's interesting because I felt while watching it, it was trying to be somewhere close to Richard Linklater's Before trilogy, but it misses just about every single beat that it's trying to do from that, basically. I mean, Andrea Riseborough is Hannah, who I think is normally a very steady hand. I think she's a very good actress. I think there's a bit of a struggle here with the depth of the character. You know, I don't think it's Riseborough's fault at all. It just looks and feels like there's no meat on the bones of Hannah. You know, this is a character, and also, I guess, the performance as well, that I think could have so much to say about the female mindset after, you know, a huge breakup, not just romantically, but also having to work together as well. But it doesn't really offer anything. You know, there's not even a glimpse of closure for her. That's the thing about it. And once again, this is another short film, 1 hour, 20 minutes, but it feels like it's on forever. There were brief moments where I thought, time's going backwards here. I'm sure this film has been on longer. It's such a frustrating film. It really is. There's so many junctures in this film where it could have been a springboard to finally kick into gear. But then the film doesn't really do it. I mean, there's a great scene where Hannah and Sultan end up in bed together and he says to her about going to stay at his place, and she responds by asking what she should do while he's at work, and he basically says, well, you could go out for a walk or you could go to the market. And then you suddenly realize, hang on, he just wants Hannah for himself to be locked away, so when he comes back from work she's going to be there, but she doesn't want that. She's a free spirit.
Yeah.
And you know, this is just not going to happen. They fall out over it. I mean, that's the moment where I'm like, kick on from here. This is the moment. This is the big argument.
Yeah, relaxed into something.
Exactly, yeah. You know, but what we end up with is Hannah walking around the dusty plains of Luxor. That's where it goes to next. I mean, is there something buried in this movie about the female mind and you know, the effects it has when you're breaking up? It's difficult to know because
is it one of those?
It's so slow. It's so slow.
To be subtle, but as a man, we're just not getting it.
You could well be right. You could well be right.
Maybe females will understand.
But yeah, maybe they'll look at it in a completely different light. I think that obviously, you know, that's the beauty of film. That's the beauty of art, is that we all see something different in it. But it's just the fact that with this one, I was thinking, okay, yes, we're going to do... No, we're not doing anything. Okay, we're just going to make Luxor look very nice again. You know, I just don't think it is anywhere near as good as what it could be. And I do feel like it's part mainly down to how the characters have been written.
Yeah. Oh, shame. It looked from the trailer like a real kind of... good watch.
Well, that's what I thought as well. I thought this looks really interesting. Andrea Riseborough, you know, steady set of hands there, good actress. Why not? And I just came away, well...
just wanting to go to Luxor.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I came away feeling the film had been tedious, apart from it maybe being a bit of an advert for a holiday. That was it.
Yeah. Oh, so when's this out?
So this is out on DVD and Blu-ray now. It's taken a while as well, actually, because I saw this. I saw this in 2020.
Blimey, that's a long time.
Yeah, I saw this in 2020 when actually during one of the lockdowns. Actually, it was streamed online at a film festival. I think it was London Film Festival. No, it was Sundance. That was right. I saw it at Sundance online, and then. It just didn't happen, basically. I don't think it went to the cinema. I don't think it ended up on streaming. Now all of a sudden it's popped up on DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah. It's been discovered. Like an archaeological temple that they're walking
around. they've brushed the dust off with the little brushes, whatever they're called. I don't know what they're called. But
Yeah. Oh, marvellous. So it's out now for if anyone wants to find out what Luxor looks like.
Yes, under the wonderful cinematography of the movie, yes.
Marvellous. What you got for us next week, Mark?
Next week, we're going to go all action-adventure because we're going to talk about a film starring Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum called The Lost City.
Ooh,
we're then going to go on a trip on the Nile with Kenneth Branagh's big screen adaptation of Death on the Nile.
Oh, excellent.
Big cast in that.
Yes.
And then we're going to talk about one of the foreign language Oscar nominated movies. It is an animated movie called Flea.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with Fleabag.
Nothing to do with Fleabag. No, it's a true story.
Just checking.
It's a true story.
About a flea?
No, nothing to do with that. It's.
Stop guessing.
Yes, stop guessing. I'll tell you next week. You will never get it anyway.
Sounds fair enough. I'll bring the ointment to repel the...
No, it's not even that either. You're just nowhere near. Nowhere near.
Film reviews and movie news.